board chair this meeting because his the other co-coordinator, Gus Hossein, was unable to come to this morning. My name is Jan Schallerberg. I work for a privacy commissioner in north of Germany. So we are trying to not make a presentation-based session this morning, but rather to pull together some of the results that are that we can derive from what has been going on during the process. First, I think Ralph will give a short overview of some of the things that happened in the time before the dynamic, before the current IGF, and then we'll try to pull some of the stuff that happened on this IGF together, so to get us all up to date on how the issue of privacy is approached at the IGF, and then we'll hope to have a more strategic discussion on how to follow up on this process and what we expect from the further development during the IGF to happen. So if I may, I'll hand over to Ralph for an overview of the issue papers.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't mind if you moved a bit closer, the ones in the back. We're not so many people here. yes, Elena, you too. Okay, this Dynamic Coalition, for those of you who are here for the first time with us, is an outcome of the two privacy workshops that were organized last year at the IGF in Athens, where we had one workshop on privacy and identity management and one on privacy and development. And afterwards, a number of participants agreed that it would be helpful and fruitful to collaborate a bit further over the year and prepare something for the next IGF and, in a way, formalize the collaboration a bit more. And when then in Athens somebody came up with the concept or the idea or the brand or whatever of dynamic coalitions, we were really happy to take that. So since then, we have found quite a large membership. Currently we have, I think, more than 70 members. Maybe I can... the address you see here in the top is... In the address bar is not the real one. The somehow the network has some problems, so I'm going through a proxy. The address we normally have is in the lower address bar, wiki.igf-online.net/wiki/members-list. No, it takes a bit to load. So we have members from a few governments, a number of corporations, a lot of NGOs, mostly, of course, from the privacy field, but also others, and a few international organizations. Our work is mainly coordinated through a mailing list, and you basically find all the information either here on the wiki. Let's see, how many members do we have at the moment? Oh, it's not a number. I should turn it into a numbered list. I think it's more than 70 at the moment. Yeah. And what we've been doing over the year is to meet a few times in real time, mostly connected to the IGF consultations in Geneva. We had one full-day meeting in February before the IGF consultations in Geneva. Then we had another meeting at the Computers Freedom and Privacy Conference in Montreal in May. And then, of course, a few of the people involved in the coalition, of the more active ones maybe, I've met here and there at different privacy-related conferences. And what we've tried to develop over the year was... was a few documents. One is a... that's what we came up with pretty quickly, an FAQ on working methods and so on, which, for example, describes what the status of our documents is, if there are any, what membership exactly means. So membership for us means people become individual members and not necessarily have to speak for or on behalf of their organizations or governments or whatever. And that was explicitly set up like this because a few government members who wanted to join the coalition and were really interested in privacy issues and in participating in this discussion, they said, hey, I can't really say anything. If you have meetings, I can't write anything on mailing lists if it's always attributed to my government, you know. So we explicitly said, no, I can even quote it. Yeah, we said the dynamic coalition, especially when addressing emerging issues, will have to explore new grounds and be a space for creative thinking and sincere interaction. Therefore, none of the views expressed by any participant in the work of the coalition will be considered as official statements of the entities they represent or are affiliated with, unless explicitly mentioned. Even though we have this formula in our FAQ, we found it's still not very easy to get government people to actually work and get actively involved. Though I have to say, Bertrand de la Chapelle, the special envoy for the Information Society of the government of France, has been really active in the privacy coalition. So, and then last year in Athens, basically, based on the workshops we had there, we decided to, for the moment, focus on three main themes. One is privacy and identity management, the other one, privacy and development, and the third one, the link between privacy and freedom of expression. And we actually developed some draft issue papers on that. Our idea was to have, bit more elaborated issue papers that describe what the link between these things is, between privacy and identity management, for example, what the relevance is of privacy in these areas. And then based on the issue papers to develop recommendations that we maybe somehow could submit to the IGF, or you maybe have heard of the idea of having messages from the IGF, you know, not formal negotiated outcomes or declarations, but more like messages to the outer world or something. We didn't actually get that far yet. We still have the draft issue papers that are not finished, but at least one of them went through a couple of iterations. And we are hoping, and some of our members promised to work on that right next week. We're hoping to have them finished in the next, I don't know, weeks or few months, and then maybe next year have recommendations. But that's, of course, something we will have to discuss here, what our working plan for the next year will be. You find all documents at the wiki. Here, FAQ, the draft issue papers, and then progress reports, and one of the statements we made at the consultations in May also. Yes.
Take the microphone for translation. You have to press a button.
Hello. Okay, I wake up. I just start following the IGF. I mean, I was in the list, but just very passive. So I will start engage with the process. But I would like to understand how the dynamic coalition works in general in all the IGF structure, which is our role. We have to issue papers, and they take it as a recommendation. Is what it is, which is the mandate. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I think the first part of the question is easier to answer. How are we structured internally? It's very easy. We have a mailing list where everybody can participate.
But in the process.
And so far, Gus Hossein from Privacy International and myself have been the coordinators, facilitators, whatever you want to call it, people who back other people to help writing and drafting and stuff like that. So then we have the wiki. The status of the dynamic coalitions and the relation to the IGF is not exactly clear, but that's not our fault. That's because the whole IGF is an experiment. It's really something new in the United Nations system. Something like this has not been there before, as far as I'm aware. And then the whole idea of dynamic coalitions is also new. You know, it's a really informal structure. I think other dynamic coalitions have maybe other working methods. And it's not really clear if the coalitions are supposed to come up with recommendations or not, or if the IGF secretariat or chairman even wants that or something like that. The only thing I know is that the IGF formally has a mandate to come up with recommendations for emerging issues of internet governance. That's paragraph 72G of the Tunis Agenda.
So we'll be
that's to me, I find this really interesting because it's really an experiment, like a laboratory for new global governance mechanisms. So we can really help and be part of developing new concepts here and new working methods. So one idea would be to develop some recommendations, for example, in the coalition. And if a critical mass of people, of members of the coalition agree on these recommendations, then maybe we can submit them to the IGF and to the IGF plenary. And then I don't know what happens. The IGF plenary might just take note of these or might even endorse them or whatever. Probably a couple of governments will, for the moment, try to stop these kind of attempts, you know, because they don't want to enter into negotiations. But that's something we also have to discuss, I think. That's really open.
I think in the security session I realized that the team is really broad because you have privacy in many of the security issues, which is, for me, privacy issues. So I think a work that the coalition could do is, for example, make privacy comments in all the cyber crime treaty and the protection of children and the CII, the infrastructure resources, because it's all cross-cutting. I think we are not addressing privacy in all each issue, and this is missing. I worry about that because they are focused a lot on security and cybercrime. They are putting like synonyms about cybercrime and law enforcement. So we should try to address privacy in those each subtopics, or whatever, I think.
Thank you very much. Henning Mortensen from Danish Industries. This is my first time in the group, and I didn't participate in Athens either. So what I say now may be my lack of knowledge. But anyway, I think that we need some marketing of this group. I have been working with privacy for several years, and it was only, say, 4 months ago that the existence of this group came to my knowledge. So perhaps we should do some marketing of the group. And then some of the challenges we face is on awareness, it's also on architecture. So perhaps if this group could share some best practices from the local countries, from our organizations, on, say, awareness, how do we influence local companies and government to improve the privacy? Can we have some framework for a privacy-enabled architecture and some description of privacy-enhancing technologies that we could share with each other? Then I think it would be very fruitful for my organization. We also have some papers on this that we would like to share. Most of them are unfortunately in Danish, but we have a few in English too. So if everybody did this, then I think we would have a lot more material to work on.
Could you give examples of the papers? Like on what and what they look like? Is that generic architectures? Or?
Yeah, we have several papers. The most important one in English is an agreement that we made with the Danish Consumer Council on privacy and RFID. We have a list of say properties that must be fulfilled when you use and implement RFID technology, and I mean that's industry and consumers that have agreed on this, and I think that's quite unique actually. We also tried to sell this document to ICTA and BEUC in Europe, and try to have them work together on this. But unfortunately, ICTA and BEUC doesn't like to be at the same table. We have some document in Danish on principles for privacy, and we've made a model on how our member companies could implement these privacy in practice by simply asking some questions to the developers and to themselves and to the end users on say these principles. We would be happy to share that with you too, but unfortunately that's in Danish and I don't think I can find the resources to translate it.
One short response to that. First of all, the marketing thing. I pulled up the members list here. It wasn't that difficult to find people who wanted to subscribe to the mailing list and maybe officially say, yes, we join the coalition. But so I think we have the largest membership of all dynamic coalitions in the IGF context. And I guess also we have been the one that has been most active throughout the year, and not just in Athens and here in Rio. But still, the problem is not to get people who subscribe to the mailing list or formally become members. The problem is to get people to actually get some work done. So if people are willing to help, that's, of course, more than welcome. So what's this here? And then the idea of exchange of best practices and so on, that's of course a neat idea. We haven't really focused on that yet. So far our work has been on the three issues, privacy and development, privacy and identity, and privacy and freedom of expression. And our approach was to really try to develop some substantive papers and, as I said, then maybe come up with recommendations for the IGF and so on. Of course, to do a collection of best practices in terms of privacy and internet governance, that would be a great idea also for a best practice forum or workshop next year in Delhi. If we could collaborate on that over the year, it would be great, I think. There was another...
Well, just following your direction of the opinion, and I do agree that it's very important to share the best practice. But the, particularly in the privacy issues, that's my opinion that it's not only the best practice. Those are so many things we don't have resolved yet. So, for example, in Japan, which I came from, I'm associating with the Japan Business Federation, and also I am a member of the BIAC to the OECD, the advisory group to the OECD, and we are now suffering from the enormous data breach from the peer-to-peer file sharing, including the privacy, individual privacy. So we haven't solved yet. So they are breaching so many information that those facts, not the best practice, but the failure story, you know. Okay. Sorry about that. My point is not the best practice, but what we were actually experiencing, not successfully solved yet. That's a very good good experience for us. That's my first point. And the second point would be when we talk about the securities, we have lots of the coalition in terms of the, for example, CSIRT, you know, the computer emergency response teams, which do actually have their missions. And in the OECD discussion, many people are talking about the cross-border collaboration, about the privacy issues. So my idea about this group, I'm also new to here, but the my idea is to, if there this group could facilitate some movement to establish those active action-based coalition group in the future, or maybe the near future, just like the CSIRT or the security emergency response teams. Privacy is not like the emergency emergency, just like in terms of that we don't have we don't rather long-term problem and long-term and serious problem for the individuals. So that's my expression. Thank you very much.
Christos Velasco, NACPEC.org, ISOC Mexico. Well, I've been involved since the very beginning of the creation of the coalition, and I was really happy to see the outcome. It was, as Ralph mentioned, one of the first coalitions that came up with a sort of like a long membership, and it's great. But I think we need to see a little bit of meaningful participation, especially from developing countries. Privacy and data protection is pretty much a thing of developed countries, but things are starting to take off in Latin America. I mean, so it's really important for those who are here and happen to be from Latin America. Let's get to work on these papers on privacy and development. Let's try to propose something meaningful, because really this is an issue that it's growing in Latin America, and we need to be aware of. And our role is to make not only our organizations aware, but our governments about the importance of taking this issue at the global level. Okay. And yes.
I just had two additional sort of project suggestions or things that it seemed useful that the group could work on. One coming out of what the gentleman said would be a group of case studies. Whenever one of the member organizations studies or gets involved with a data breach event or an event that involves a variety of privacy issues, it seems like it could be useful if that group could put a summary or some discussion of that at a central location on the website, so that the different groups, when they're working on their research, would have some detail and some information on recent events that maybe that group doesn't have the resources or the experience to gather themselves to go into their research. And then secondarily, I was wondering if the group has discussed at all focusing or drilling down to some degree by industry, so looking at the differences where, for privacy concerns, say where search is involved, where search engines are involved, or the differences in contextually in privacy concerns where commercial transactions are involved or where health information is involved. I realize this might be, to some degree, revealing the fact that I'm American and American law and privacy is sort of helplessly fractured into all these areas, but I do think there are some different implications in those areas, and it might be useful to look at them individually as well. Thank you.
Just to be clear, because also RFIDs were mentioned before, we are not a coalition on generic privacy. This is all in the context of the Internet Governance Forum, so we have to focus on privacy and Internet stuff. Of course, that's also a lot
right.
of
things. And I think that at least the context that I mentioned do fit within a internet privacy factor.
Caspar Bowden, Chief Privacy Advisor for Microsoft in Europe, Middle East, and Africa. I wasn't able to be at Athens, but Microsoft participation in Athens was secured by Jerry Fishenden, my colleague from the UK. I had three ideas, perhaps, to take forward. One, I'm not sure whether this is a good idea or not, and that is to broaden the name of the coalition to privacy and data protection. privacy and data protection are different subjects in many ways. There is overlaps, but they're conceptually also differences. That might or help also to get more participation from data protection authorities, individual data protection authorities around the world. It's great that Schleswig-Holstein, as usual, is at the forefront of many advanced thinking in this area, but we could do with some other data protection authorities. The second idea is perhaps we could think about examining, it struck me that a lot of the workshops and sessions in this conference were about cybersecurity, were about legal instruments such as the Cybercrime Convention, and looking at legal differences between different environments. Would it be a useful activity to examine the differences in legislation for privacy around the world and have an activity which would almost parallel that examination of differences in the area of cybersecurity? And to keep the subject of the group sort of closely focused on internet issues, as Ralph said, I think is extremely important. But it's also true that around the world there are now a number of well-established computer science conferences looking at privacy research, privacy technology research. And I think an ongoing task is to try and bridge the gulf between the state of the art in computer science research and the concepts of privacy emerging there. And policymakers, it's extremely difficult in many cases to actually describe in a way that's accessible to policymakers some of the subtleties emerging from computer science research. And there have been examples where individual computer science researchers have quite successfully managed to distill a tutorial about their subject in a form which would be quite suitable for actually giving almost a tutorial for policymakers about the latest sort of, if you like, hard science of privacy in research. And I can see that there could be a workshop we could organize for next year, which would expressly be trying to attract policymakers to provide tutorials in some of the concepts from computer science for advanced privacy technologies.
Privacy Technology 101 for policymakers. Okay.
There are some very good ideas in this. I just wanted to comment on a few of them. First one, this thing about comparing legislation around the world, that's a very good thing. The OECD has started such work and asked BIAC to create some sort of a catalogue from all the OECD countries on their legislation. I think we are several here who have access to that work. So we might simply be able to borrow it or copy paste it or something, and also I think that this idea about a tutorial for policymakers and a description of the good implementations of technology are very good things to work with and to share among each other.
Hello, I'm Brad Biddle from Intel Corporation. Just one kind of broad comment. We've not been active in this dynamic coalition, but I'm really struck by what a success story this is. In contrast, perhaps to some other dynamic coalitions, it's really. I just want to congratulate you on the work you've done and on a really kind of an inclusive approach and very apparently quite productive work. And I think that's very striking and I think. Very sort of heartening to see something like this. The narrower comment I wanted to make is that I was perhaps picking up on the gentleman from Microsoft's comments that I do think there are some interesting opportunities. I attended yesterday the consumer protection and data breach notification workshop and I had the sense coming out of that it was awkward timing and there wasn't a lot of attendance, but my general sense was that there was a great interest, as the gentleman from Mexico mentioned, in developing countries and really trying to understand privacy generally and consumer protection and data breach notification laws specifically. And I think there's a real opportunity there. I think wearing an industry hat, I believe that industry would have incentives to really participate constructively in that, if nothing else from a kind of compliance challenge perspective, is that from Intel's point of view, we certainly are very supportive of privacy generally and data breach notification laws specifically, and we face a really difficult compliance challenge when there are different rules globally. We even face this domestically in the United States with different state laws. So I do think there are some opportunities there, and that the linkage to data protection, I think, is something that that I also would endorse as an interesting idea. So thank you.
Yeah, these are all really, really great ideas, but I start to wonder who is going to do the work. Great. Yeah. Maybe we can just see who is really willing to contribute to the coalition work in this one way or the other. Maybe you can just raise your hands. Oh, this is great. Okay. Oh, for those of you who haven't heard about that, there's a privacy Zamba party tonight. We can tell you... If you become an active member of the coalition, you're welcome to join. And you only get the details of where it is when you have subscribed to the mailing list.
Well, I'll try to make one proposal, because there have been many ideas raised, and I think that's great. But to consolidate that to some extent, would it make sense to try and stick with the issue papers we have right now, to try and focus this into those issue papers, because we have a basis already there. I mean, everybody is free to go further than the concept of issue papers and to commit content that doesn't fit into that specific format, but also to propose new issue papers. But for now, I would encourage everybody to look into those papers and see if what they think is meaningful and useful, if that could be something that is put into those papers, just to get our effort a little bit straightened up. And then the other thing that I would like to comment on is the plurality of proposals is very good and fits very well into the IGF scheme and the dynamic coalition scheme. On the other hand, it does make sense to kind of focus our efforts to some of the stuff, especially because we have limited resources. Most of the people will not be able to work for the coalition on a full-time basis, nor on a part-time basis, but do that while spend a couple of days to some extent. So doing things that, for example, that are already done within other structures, doubling those efforts, are something that we should be careful not to do. There is the Conference of Data Protection Commissioners out there who have a lot of material. There are several data protection authorities out there that offer a lot of information on their websites and that already consolidated stuff. So a mere collection of information to one point, if there is not something completely new about the way we collect things, doesn't appear to be such a thing that it would be very worthwhile investing a lot of effort into from my perspective. I'd be rather interested in using this as a forum to take things a little bit further, and that has been already raised, I think, by a couple of people, and issue papers could be a start. is the idea to come to a more general and global consensus of what privacy standards are. There is no global convention on privacy issues. I don't see that happening in the next couple of years, but I see a need for that already now, and the need is going to be more strong as industry is going to be interested in having being able to adapt to one specific standard and use that as a common ground for applying their solutions all over the world. I think a lot of countries will be reluctant to that because they want to keep up their own specific privacy standards. So you got to be careful not to lower the standard as a whole. But still, I see some need for that, and that would be also very supportive for some of the countries who haven't yet implemented a privacy regulation. So that could be something worthwhile, and picking up the research done by OECD on different privacy standards worldwide and pulling these papers into here, especially into the issue papers, seems to be something that I think would be worthwhile investing in. I think there were two very concrete proposals for what could be done for the next IGF. One was what Caspar Bowden said, the workshop on I phrased it as PET for policymakers, so privacy-enhancing technologies, an overview of these technologies, and bring that forth towards policymakers. I think that could be a very good idea. To some extent, we already went into that direction with our identity management workshop we'd had yesterday, and there were other proposals heading to a similar direction. I think that would also make sense to supply additional stuff to hand out with that, so to evolve from that, and that would also fit within the concept of showing best practices. So that could be one worthwhile thing that we want to bring forward for the next meeting. The other thing went into the same direction, was going to show off some best practices. And I'd like to invite the audience to bring forth other proposals for what we want to do in New Delhi to get from the abstract level that we have been discussing now to more concrete proposals. So if there is anybody who has another idea to work on here, please go ahead.
Just as a clarification, Jan, there was also the proposal to have a collection of best practices and maybe do a best practice forum. That's what you mean?
Yeah, so
okay.
Pull those two together, see where we have best practices, see what we can derive from the research in privacy-enhancing technologies. I mean, there's already quite a number of privacy-enhancing technologies being in use, so these are already best practices. But we could go a little bit further, not only showcasing those that are already in use, but also giving some insight into research, making a presentation in Delhi and supplying some collection of one-pagers for different best practices and give it to the audience and whoever is interested. There is one remark over there.
Hello, good morning. My name is Max Angus. I'm active in the Bill of Rights Dynamic Coalition, and well, we have been criticized to work a little bit by ourselves and sort of reinvent the wheel by touching on issues like privacy. And, just to clarify and to openly invite you to participate, the idea is not that we as Bill of Rights campaign produce something as, apart from what you guys are doing, but actually to give all the different coalitions a platform to contribute your results, so to say, and in that way have a platform for the IGF to present the different points that are made within the different dynamic coalitions and have, let's say, the an actionable, I heard a lot of actionable and best practices and things like that, basically how to apply the different aspects that we are discussing here in the IGF and have them applied in the real world. And that is sort of the idea of the Bill of Rights, and you're very much invited to contribute your results to that work.
Yeah, we discussed that a bit yesterday over dinner, and as far as I understood, the Bill of Rights coalition and the work you're doing there is to also develop different versions of Bill of Rights, of the different human rights, and how they really apply and how they break down to the internet. A bit like you mentioned the Creative Commons approach, that you have a lawyer-readable version, so to speak, a human-readable, and a machine-readable. And that, of course, nicely connects to the idea to dig a bit more into privacy-enhancing technologies and how they really have to be built in order to have them really human rights-enhancing. You know, that could maybe also be some output or some synergy here. If we get something out of the work on privacy-enhancing technologies, for example, that could feed into a best practice workshop, that could feed into some collection of papers or short how-tos or best practices, but could also feed into the Bill of Rights Coalition, of course.
Two additional topics or projects that I think could be useful to investigate. I think it's really good to move from the sort of general issue papers that we've done so far, you've done so far, towards these more specific topics. One more general area, however, that I don't see discussed that I think could be really useful is what specifically changes or uniquely shifts about privacy when you move to an online context. So we were saying that this is the Internet Governance Forum and we're looking at privacy, particularly online. And I think there are a lot of paradigm shifts that occur when you're talking about privacy online as opposed to offline. But I don't see an issue paper or an analysis of that among the things the group's worked on. Maybe it's been worked into those three papers because I haven't been able to read them. But, I mean, among other things, the fact that it's almost easier to track people than to not track people when you shift online, that you have concerns or there are questions about how long the data is stored in a way that you don't worry about it if someone's watching you offline. There are a lot of paradigm shifts that I think could be useful to discuss. And then one other thing that I was thinking about that is particularly interesting, we're all in this room talking about this and caring about this a great deal. Consumers, I think if you look at how they voted with their feet, don't seem to care about it very much. In the developing world, in the developed world, I think throughout the world, for whatever reason it might be, there is not a lot of pressure from consumers as a whole for greater privacy protections and so on and so forth. And it could be a really useful thing to try to figure out why that is. I'm not sure that we would have the skills here or not, but it's not a directly legal exploration, but I think it feeds into how one could establish a transnational approach to privacy. Why is it that people who are affected by these privacy shifts every day don't seem to care?
Sorry, I missed this because I was somewhere else. But Casper's just asked me if I could speak. Or to explain, I'm Merlin Errol, Lord Errol, House of Lords, Parliament in the UK. And he thought I ought to say something probably from the parliamentary point of view or the government point of view, except the government and parliament aren't exactly the same thing. The government, probably the bit you hit most of the time, is what I call the executive. Parliament is supposed to tell the executive what to do. And so we worry about the balance of power between the executive and the people, the citizens. And privacy, therefore, becomes an issue because on the one hand, you've got the desire of the executive to try and manage things in the better interests of the citizen for their own good, but sometimes that leads to an abuse of power. On the other hand, you've got the right of the citizen for some privacy. Now, as we say in the UK, privacy, whichever you want. The real problem with it is balancing this need to protect citizens with the fact that eventually if you give too much power, it will get abused. And the thing that always terrifies me is people saying, I've got nothing to hide. Because actually, the problem is when the state makes mistakes, then suddenly it doesn't matter what you had or didn't have, you may well get incarcerated, you know, locked up for a very long time. So therefore, we must have some privacy. If we don't, it's very dangerous. And the real challenge is trying to give enough powers to the privacy protectors, such as the Information Commissioner in the UK, against the other organs of the state who are desperate in the name of anti-terrorism or whatever to get that information. And the problem comes also is that surveys show that a lot of people, like 95% or 98% of the people in the UK, really don't appear to matter. The problem is many of the surveys are done among the poor people who are being managed and the state has their data anyway. The real danger are the people who will come of interest later in their life because they get into positions of power. And you've got the danger of what I call the J. Edgar Hoover syndrome, when suddenly a powerful bureaucrat can blackmail or control the legislature and the people making the rules. And it's all very well to say it won't happen somewhere. Unfortunately, history teaches us it nearly always will. So therefore, I'm very keen on a strong right to privacy, anonymity, particularly in certain dealings with central government. But it's very hard to achieve because everything is trying to move in the opposite direction. So I do think we do need a right to privacy, whatever a lot of other people think. The other thing that people sometimes confuse it with is, you know, well, the supermarkets have got all your information anyway. But the difference is if the supermarkets make a mess up on your data, you get the wrong tin of baked beans delivered. If the government get it wrong, you can end up in jail or dead. And that's the other thing about privacy. It is connected with the fact of data corruption and the fact that the data won't be accurate that's held on you. And so therefore you need privacy as well, so they don't even get any data on you to get it corrupt. Does that make sense?
Well, if I hear you right, Merlin, then you're suggesting that there needs to be perhaps a greater focus on the connections between surveillance and privacy and government surveillance. And within the discussions of parliamentarians that have been at this group, would you say there's sufficient sort of understanding of the nuances of privacy issues, or can you think of any strategies to raise awareness amongst parliamentarians or to increase the depth of their understanding of privacy issues?
No, I think, in fact, if anything, the opposite is the problem at the moment, is that the emphasis is on things which are absolutely right, like child protection. But in the name of child protection, you set up, in the UK, we've just set up a thing called a contact point database, which will contain the addresses of all the children, their doctors, their parents, and other flags of concern. And that will be accessible to 300,000 civil servants in local government, central government, and all over, and carers. And that, to me, is hugely dangerous. Oh, sorry, right. Yeah, sorry. But I suppose what I'm trying to say in this is that that no one sees the danger in all this centralization of data and a data interchange. They all think it's for the good of the citizen, and the emphasis in the government thinking at the moment is very much on we know best, we should have the information on citizens to help them. It's not on how do we protect our citizens from the wrong people looking at the information. And I suppose I'm using an example. I know it's not an internet example, but it's typical of the way the thinking is going, and it's hugely dangerous to me. The Surveillance Commissioner and the Interception Commissioners do not have enough staff, nor the real ability to see what's going on. And that is not where the emphasis goes at all. Partly because the governments don't want to be looked at themselves properly, you know.
I'm not so sure to that extent that from looking at the IGF, I see a lot of people referring to the term privacy, and what I understand is that there is a broad uneasiness about the centralization of data and about what is happening to privacy and data protection through moving more and more into an online and information society. So people, at least here in this fora, have an awareness, but it's not that they can really boil it down. Even going to that point and saying, in general, we got to be careful about centralizing data would be more concrete than a lot of people would say that could be a solution. So that was a very, very good point you made. Centralization of data is something we got to look into more deeply. I want to also address another fact. Privacy has been addressed as a human rights issue. We don't have it on the real human rights agenda yet, but that's maybe one of the points that could be worked on. But we always tend to understand that this is also considered a weak human right. A lot of people don't care as long as it's not getting really in their way. Well, they say, as you said, I got nothing to hide, I don't care. For some people, there is a strong point to the human right aspect, but I want to also point out that there is another, a different aspect on the privacy. It's not only a human right, but it's very important for a democratic society as a right to be in there. And it's very important for a democratic society to protect the privacy of their citizens, because a democratic society builds up on the concept of autonomy of the individuals. And if that autonomy is deprived because there is a lot of data collection and there it is easy to get influence on the society by very few people, that foundation of democratic society is taken away. And so there is a vital interest of a democratic country to protect the privacy of their citizens, maybe even more than of the individuals themselves.
I don't know if it does. Can I make one other comment very quickly? Which is the difference between common law systems and statute law systems, as I'll generically call them. In a common law system, we try to set boundaries to people's behavior, but within those boundaries, you get on and do what you liked. So there's a society in which you would expect to have privacy, because what the government thinks you should do, or the great and the good think you should do, doesn't matter. As long as you don't break certain boundaries, you can get on with life and be as mad as you like, as eccentric as you like. In statute law systems, they try to set the rules for your interrelationships between people and with official bodies and with companies and everything like that. The trouble with rules is that they don't work in a complex network. And so all that happens is that the network reforms around them in an unpredictable way, the law of unintended consequences. But the societies that have been grown up in a statute law system don't think the rules matter, because they're used to ignoring them, because in the human world you can't obey all the rules. The danger when we move into the internet world, where you can be monitored anywhere around the world, and what you're doing and who you're near and all those things, and the data mining potentials globally, mean that it becomes very dangerous when other people are examining your behavior precisely. And I certainly grew up in a system where that was not permitted and not normal. And I don't like the shift to being watched the whole time.
I think it's fascinating you raise that issue of common law versus civil law systems, Merlin. And statute law systems. I'm actually not persuaded I think that Anglo-Saxons are perhaps particularly used to treasuring that aspect of a common law system, that everything that isn't forbidden is permitted, in a sense. I wonder, actually, if the technologies of surveillance that are now available have radically changed that position, because what we seem to have found is that common law countries, in particular, have become particularly susceptible to encroachments on individual privacy by mass surveillance systems. And in fact, it is the absence of constitutional or statute law-based protections which has made common law systems especially vulnerable nowadays. And I think we see this especially in the UK. So whilst that has been the traditional position regarding, for example, freedom of the individual and privacy under common law systems, I actually think the technologies of surveillance have shifted that around almost 180 degrees.
Can I say you're absolutely right in your analysis of it. The trouble in the common law system countries, or the ones that are used to not being interfered with by the government, is we just don't intrinsically, inherently understand the danger. We don't believe it exists. And that's the big danger, because it's happening around us. And we just, people say it won't happen here. And that's that. You're absolutely right. We don't see the dangers. People who've lived under a system which has been intrusive understand the danger and are much more concerned about it. And it's crept up on us, and you're 100% right.
I was just going to say quickly that I think this gets back to the shift to an online environment because the defaults change. Where the defaults change from what's not precluded is allowed to what's not explicitly allowed is precluded when you're suddenly regulated by code instead of by law.
What I would like to do is, I try to take notes of what was suggested here and what we could do. What I would like to do is to attach some names to these points here, especially to the deliverables. So, again, there's a chance to raise your hands and find out where the privacy Zamba will be tonight. Caspar.
I know that I can think of half a dozen leading privacy technology researchers in computer science who, subject to somebody paying their plane fare, would come and give a tutorial, I'm pretty sure. So I could undertake to try and put together, or with others' help, but you can put my name down for helping organize a tutorial for next year.
Cool.
On privacy technology.
And also finding the funding to get them here.
That might be possible.
Okay.
Okay, I'm in with that as well.
Okay, where was that? That was here, right? Okay. Patrizia?
Actually, I will start working only in December. I can do it before. I'm traveling. So, yeah.
Well, thanks for including my name.
I
already have a paper there that no one really provide input, so we should work it out together. Oh, okay. I'll make sure it gets to you by email. And if there are other representatives from developing countries here that would like to get involved in the drafting of the paper, please let us know.
Excuse me, while we are just talking about privacy and development, what about this here, bridging the gap between the privacy community and the developing countries, you know, setting up something for IGF next year? Would you also be interested in that, for example, or in setting up something like a workshop or whatever for IGF next year or so, like... A bit similar to the technology for policymakers, we could do a privacy for developing country policymakers or something. So, that's a good point. We also could need help with from people who just take care of getting funding without working on substance or stuff like that. Just people who know how to get money. That would be really helpful. Because we had this problem a couple of times also in preparing for this IGF meeting here, that we had a couple of really good people interested in working with us, but we didn't have funding to get them here. That would, of course, be helpful.
Andrew from APC. One of the big issues that we often deal with, which I'm sure will emerge through this, particularly in relation to engaging people from various developing countries, is language. I work with some excellent privacy activists in Korea. They would be here except for the language issue. And I think that's a very significant problem because we have access to some incredible resource in various countries, but the language barrier precludes their engagement in processes such as this. If there was some capacity within the fundraising process that may emerge through this that takes language into consideration, I think that would broaden the input considerably.
Yes, I would like to work with this practices collection, since I think I suggested most of it. But I would like to have some other volunteer to join me. I don't know if there's anybody here.
Can you say your name again?
Yeah, Henning Mortensen. Yeah.
Good. Microphone.
Are we going to be linked with other forums like the Asia Pacific Economic Forum? I'm quite kind of concerned about the APEC framework, and the next meeting is in Peru. And so are we going as a coalition present something, the ISO papers?
Well, so far we don't really have a like an established link or input mechanism into international organizations or structures like APEC or Council of Europe or something, because we are set up and work in the context of the IGF. But we have people from the Council of Europe and from other international organizations as members of the coalition. So the links are there, you just need to build on them. And of course, if people from the coalition go to APEC privacy meetings, for example, and want to present our work there, nobody would stop them, of course. Quite the opposite.
Probably it's not a good idea to go.
I had the feeling I had seen more hands when I asked for volunteers earlier.
Hi, my name is Tsuming from Malaysia. Currently, we don't have any kind of privacy law in Malaysia at all. So I'm not sure where I can help out. So it's quite new to this kind of thing. But yeah. I am willing to help out. But it's just that I can't see exactly where I fit in at the moment.
I think that would maybe be a helpful perspective. The link between the privacy community and the developing countries, especially in trying to set up a workshop or something for next year's IGF, to have somebody from a country like Malaysia where there is no privacy law, and really think through how to make it interesting for people from these countries who don't have the structures, who don't have the data protection commissioners and so on, how to attract them to privacy. And then, of course, it's helpful if you come from such a country, I guess. Just as an idea.
Well, I just thought I mentioned. I saw you may be aware of this, but Malaysia has actually just published its draft personal data protection law. Oh. So if it hasn't got one now, it'll be very intensive, profitable time to focus on that in your country.
I should just say, after having suggested many paper topics, that I'm interested in working in a number of the paper topics that we discussed, but there are these three draft issue papers that are still outstanding that maybe the group should be resolving first to get the broader framework before we talk about more specific issues. And or I'm not sure which of the papers that were batted around there was interest in from the larger group.
I think in the context of the IGF, it would be especially helpful to talk about the value of privacy in the internet world. You know, why do we need it, and what exactly does it mean on the internet? It's not that easy.
Do we have a definition of the internet? I mean, UN has been talking about an internet of things, and with this perspective, RFID might be interesting and other sensor technology. But on the other hand, we could also limit it ourselves, of course, to only, well, have discussion of privacy and the more classical internet with HTML pages and so on.
Well, yeah, we can discuss that at length. Just as one remark on that, I think there's not such a conceptual difference between Web 2.0 and privacy, for example, and privacy and the Internet of Things. I think the basic question is around privacy in public, so to speak. If you move on the internet or if you move in the physical world and have RFID chips connected somehow to some network, I think the general question is, how do you move in public or semi-public spaces and still have an expectation of privacy, and what would that mean? Maybe that could be the link. But it would, of course, be interesting to work on that. I would also be interested in that.
Can I just say very good? I think the challenge is working out where the transfer comes in, that much of the information about you will be collected over the internet locally. The internet is both local and global, if you see what I mean. And the governments are starting to exchange things through memorandum of understanding globally, which they may have collected locally. So when you move, they can still follow you. And that's where a lot of the danger lies. And you can't ignore one completely and just look at the other. The other thing that concerns me, I don't know if anyone's discussed it, is the plans that Google has at the moment. Google has the most incredible amount of storage and has been collecting data in order to give you a better browsing experience. But that is sitting presumably unregulated. We don't even know what jurisdictions around the world. Has that been discussed? I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of the meeting.
Not no. Exactly.
Oh, well, I think there's huge implications what are they holding it under? What rules, whatever? You know, is it according to the local rules where they first collected that data? But it may well be stored somewhere else. They've been buying terabytes of cheap storage around the place, I think you'll find, because they want to help people search better. Mm. Of course. I'm not, by the way, I'm not anti-Google or anything like that. Don't get me wrong. I just think there are certain privacy implications in it.
Well, I just wanted to make a couple of comments. One about the existing issue papers. And I did quite a bit of the drafting on the privacy and identity issue paper. And although because I wasn't in Athens, I didn't really know what dynamic coalitions were, how they worked. And what I'm learning from this meeting here is nobody else does either. But having had a look and a feel for how IGF and dynamic coalitions work, I'm less optimistic than I was that it will be possible to collectively author sort of really high quality definitive policy papers, analytic policy papers. I think possibly the structures are too loose, and the sheer amount of time that it takes to produce extremely high quality policy papers. Maybe so far we haven't quite got that critical mass. I mean, I certainly hoped from that initial draft that other people would come in and start building on that and editing it and adding to it. It hasn't happened.
It has.
Has it?
Yes.
Okay, in that case, I'm sorry. I'm
Edison
very glad of that.
Has done another draft.
Okay.
From Epic.
All right. Well, in that case, forget that. I had one other idea, which is, I think, a very important part of the privacy regime in some parts of the world, particularly Europe, is the notion that the individual has a right to transparency, has a right to access data which is held about them by organizations. This right is more strongly expressed in the Data Protection Directive in Europe than, for example, in the OECD principles. But I think that is one, as it were, fault line, maybe, that divides the Internet of Things and RFID agenda from, say, Web 2.0. It's implicit in Web 2.0 that there is, as it were, a user interface, and that user interface can potentially provide a way of giving transparency to the user. Okay. Whereas with the Internet of Things and RFID, the big problem is that the tracking of individuals can occur, in a sense, without any user interface being present. So it's a real problem to understand how controls can be given to the individual dynamically. So one project which I'm trying to think through in a number of different places at the moment is how can we actually improve the effective right of transparency and subject access to data and make that more immediate, more online, more free of cost, and do that in a safe way? What are the implications raised by that? And this really sort of connects the legal agenda very much to the privacy technology agenda in a way that isn't often thought about. So I just wondered what other people think about that idea, the idea of trying to promote more immediate, less expensive, and more comprehensive access by the individual to data held about them.
Well, let me comment on that, if I may. We did some extensive research in that field within the Prime project, trying to find interfaces for doing that, trying to also define some protocols, and we'll definitely continue to work on that with the follow-up research that will be starting next year. And I think there's already some constituencies who do implement such approaches. For example, Google, to show a positive side, in this respect, they offer an ability to store your search requests, so you can look it up. What data did you deliver to Google as well? So there is a transparency aspect to that, and I think yes, that is a worthwhile effort. But on the other hand, if I look at how many, as a data protection commissioner's office, how many requests we get for these transparency questions, it's not a very big issue, to be honest. There are requests, and there are a number of requests, but it's not in the thousands or something like that. And I doubt if that's just due to the fact that people are not aware. I rather would think that it's due to the fact that people are not that interested. But, I mean, there is no research on that yet, so...
The only research I'm aware of is a Eurobarometer survey from 2004, and that showed that it's true that fewer than 3% of people in Europe had exercised this right of subject access at any time with any organization. But on the other hand, only 1/3 of people were aware that they had this right. In other words, two-thirds of people were not aware that they had one of this fundamental aspect of their data protection rights in Europe. And I can't help wondering if one of the reasons that people don't exercise this right more, those people who know about it, is because they have to do it, offline. Yeah. They have to often pay some money, and that mounts up for a number of different organizations. They have to wait quite a long time, typically 1 month. And then the data they get back is through the post, as printouts. And, of course, that data, because it's not in digital form, and because you have to wait such a long time, it's not very useful for people to calibrate their privacy risk.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't get me wrong. I'm totally supporting that kind of effort, and maybe I sounded too skeptical. I think it's a very worthwhile effort, and I think it could make support a lot the awareness of people, because they can see what data has been stored. And the only thing that I'm not too sure about is whether the companies will adopt to that in a very fast time frame, and it would be interesting to discuss how to support that kind of effort of consumer protection, and that definitely could be a good topic for something as the IGF, definitely. I think we got only about 2 or 5 minutes left, so... trying to conclude the session. I think some is already put up here, so we have some kind of next step and agenda on here. The one question I wanted to raise is, what about meetings before the daily IGF? Is there going to be already foreseeable some situation for good collocation where some of the people that are here can meet again and work some on some of the issues. Any proposals on that?
The Computer Freedoms and Privacy Conference in early May, which is going to be hosted by the Yale Information Society Project in New Haven. Seems like an appropriate venue.
That has always been kind of a bit of a problem in the work over the last year. Of course, we also tried to meet here and there since Athens, and we also had a meeting at the CFP in Montreal. But it's always different communities, you know. At Montreal, you have the usual suspects in the privacy and surveillance field and crypto field and so on. And then we had another meeting connected to the IGF consultations in Geneva in February. But there you only have the people who routinely go to IGF consultations, and you don't get the privacy specialists and crypto guys there, you know. So it's really hard to find a place where all of these would go, unless you just get funding for them and can fly them in, you know. But
encourage data protection authorities from Spain. Mm. At least, or the Ibero-American Data Protection Network. They do work on data protection, I mean. This is something I will work, will try to work on that. Mm. Yeah, because I think there are the community who follows the other process is not involving with this. Or probably they have the same problem like I have. I didn't know what it is. I just saw a mailing list. Mm. Once in a while, you meet in different countries, no idea how. Yeah. I don't know. I don't involve. Probably I not capture my interest. I don't know, but probably many people is in the same situation. Gaspar said the same, and I feel like him. So probably there are more people like that. And probably no, I don't know. We try to make more meetings in different places and try to incorporate all the people from other to here, at least with inputs or sharing the issue papers and see if we receive feedback. If we receive it, you know.
I mean, we have the wiki, so it's probably a very easy thing for people to just add a page on important dates coming up, conferences where we could meet, and then maybe just say, I'm going there, who else is going, and then people can add if they are going, and we can see if there's a critical mass to have a meeting of at least a subgroup of the coalition, which also would be helpful.
I could do that. Mm. I could put the meetings of privacy and see who is.
So I think we have to conclude. I found this was a very, very nice and cooperative and productive session. We explicitly try to do not the usual format with PowerPoint slides and, you know, but to have this kind of real workshop thing. And I think it worked quite well. I'm really happy. I just hope that people also walk the talk. So I have your names, and everybody else who wants to collaborate or just keep up to date with what's going on in the Privacy Coalition is, of course, welcome to subscribe to our mailing list. All the information is on the website in the wiki. The address is up there. This is the wiki that's part of the community website for the IGF. But you also find a link if you go to the official IGF website in govforum.org. You also find a link to the Privacy Coalition with all the information, so it's easy to find. Okay.
Famous last words from your side.
Okay. And if you want to come to the party tonight, talk to us later. I don't have the address here.
I have. Okay. It's if you want to go to the party, it's Rio Escenarium. It's the bar. We could meet at 7 downstairs, and we go arrange for the taxis because we are with local people. If not, we could meet at 8 directly in the bar. We are going to be in the fair floor because it's a 5-floor bar. It's very nice. It's in the old town. It's 5-floor. You have to hear jazz, bossa nova, samba. And if you want, you just eat there. If you want, you drink. If you want, you dance. Depends of the floor. So you have for all tastes. And it's one of the top 10 bars in all Latin America, have won many prizes and everything. So it's very famous.
Thank you, everybody.